This meeting of the Port Townsend Commission is now in order. Please stand for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Could we do the national anthem? You could get some local entertainment if that is the city. All right. Any changes, additions, what have you to the agenda for today?
Have none.
None.
I make a motion that we accept the agenda.
A second then.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Recognition.
So commissioners, we have Chris Sparks here, the manager of maintenance, who would like to say a few words.
Wow, throw me to the wolves right after today. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
I'd like to recognize Laura and Sean. Laura's been here for 10 years. She's had the daunting task of all the landscaping for the port, 300 acres at the airport. Sean's been here for 20, keeps the travel lifts up and running, fixes everything that possibly breaks. I don't know how he does it, but he does it. And they're both amazing employees. I'd like to recognize them today.
Yeah. Okay.
I just wanted to say that I'm really appreciative of all the work you guys did. The landscaping always looks wonderful. I get people commenting on that, and I think I'm so proud of that. And I'm also appreciative, having had a repair shop at one time, of Sean's abilities. He's not just a guy that can do this, he can do that. And being able to do a lot of everything and do it well is a real talent that is difficult to find. So thank you, Sean. Appreciate it.
Chair, if I could just add, you know, these guys are the backbone of the port. We had the good fortune of meeting with yard staff this morning to pass on basically a recognition of them from the adventurous folks. And all of these line staff are actually more than the foundation. They are the heart and soul of the port of Port Townsend, and can't thank them enough for all that they do.
Thank you.
Somebody asked me today, you know, what else does Laura do? Because I see her every now and then at Point Hudson. And the person said, I see her every now and then at Point Hudson. I said,
that's true.
She never gets off a lawnmower. She's on a lawnmower 24/7. So you're just seeing her as she cycles around.
Right. Yeah. She's out there maintaining the ferry circles at the airport.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, all guys. Right.
Public comments. Please, for the record, state your name and keep your comments to 3 minutes and on topic. That's rules. Anybody would like to speak? Yes, ma'am.
Kit Kittredge, Quilcene. And I'm just speaking in regards to proposed levy tax. And in our discussions in South County, one of the biggest questions is come up, well, what are they gonna do for us down here? And I said, I don't believe that there's a budget or plan with this money that's come forth, and I think that there would be more support and a little less dubiousness about it if the port were to identify, okay, this is what Point Hudson gets, this is what Quilcene gets, this is what the airport gets, or some little nugget to hook people in if you truly want to have it happen. So anyway, just FYI, and as always, wanting our marina to be dredged this year so we can get in and out in the next month or two.
Thank you.
Actually, today, people are wanting to go, and it's very, very difficult. Thank you.
Awesome. Great. Kind of came up down in Quilcene as a question. I've always understood that court commissions cannot bind future court commissions. And I wonder if we make commitments to use the IDD money, which really is only taken every year by year basis, to what extent does that commitment buying future commissions or not, or what is the legal rubric?
So, I always explain it this way. Externally, port commissions bind future port commissions all the time. They enter into a long-term lease with someone, they agree to buy a piece of property, make payments, they lease a truck. Those are all commitments that extend past a port commission's term. What, for any elected officials, not just port officials, what you can't do is say future port commissions or future city councils or future county commissions will do this with money or will levy this tax rate, because those are the decisions they make as commissioners. Having said that, that's kind of the legal analysis. The experience I have doing this a while is if you develop a well thought out policy as a commission and adopt it, it doesn't have the force of law, but it has the force of logic and the force of history and the force of promise to the community that you're going to do something. And so those tend to, I don't want to say bind the future commission, but provide a direction that a future commission would have to purposely change. They would have to say, you know what, we realized this was what we were doing, but we're going to purposely change that. So it's a bit of a speed bump for future commissions to do something different, but it's not legally binding.
So in that regard, we have a big capital projects list. It contains lots of stuff, which includes dredging the harbor at the entrance at Colsey. And so for us to go ahead and say, well, of these proceeds that we anticipate receiving, we think that we should dedicate in priority, like this is one, this is two, this is three, and so on like that. That wouldn't then be burdening future commissions. That'd be saying, this is what we think this money should be go for, and it's our point of view right now, we think this should be the way to go forward. Is that correct?
That is correct. And you see it in a wide variety of things. You just did a leasing policy where this commission adopted a policy on leasing. It said, this is how we're going to lease property. This is what we're going to do. There's nothing stopping future commissions. Say, you know what? We love high-rise condos all along the water, except that the policy's already been adopted and you've already thought about it. And it really takes a lot of effort to, it's not legal, it's just observational. And Jim may have seen this or others. Once an elected official has kind of set down a course of action and promised the public, it's pretty hard for the next set to say, you know, we're going to just change direction. We don't want that anymore. You know, so.
Hi, I'm Ron Hayes. And I have a question on the IDD levy. I missed that meeting, unfortunately, and so I didn't hear everything that was said. I've gone on the website to look for information, and I can't find anything out about what the proposed levy rate is. I can see it's a maximum of 45 cents per thousand, but obviously you guys aren't going to do that. You're
$2.70 per thousand.
What?
$2.70 per thousand, period, exclamation.
Yeah, maybe I can explain that. So what the legislature did in 2015 has changed the law. So historically, port levy rates were up to 45 cents a thousand to be levied over a six-year period. It was the experience throughout the state that those were difficult to administer and to, frankly, have voters pass because they couldn't spend the money in 6 years. So now what the legislature says is you take the maximum levy rate times 6 years. That's why it's 270. Six
okay.
times 45 is 270. But you can levy it over 20 years.
So 270 times
well,
6 years.
Well, you got two pieces of the equation. You go 45 cents times 270 times the current assessed value yields a dollar number.
Okay.
So if you take 45 cents times 6 years times whatever the assessed value of.
And we have that number, don't we?
$15.2
million. $15.2
million.
Oh, okay.
So once you have $15.2 million, you can use it over 20 years.
And that's the difference is that $15.2 million is what 45 cents per thousand for 6 years would do.
Okay.
Except collecting it all in 6 years.
Exactly. Right.
So what we're doing is taking the same exact amount, theoretically, and then stretching it out over 20 years so that it's substantially less per
but
day.
The most that can be taken in any one tax year is 45 cents.
Right.
And if you don't use it over 20 years, it's gone.
Yeah. I've been hearing rumors that I just wanted to clarify that, and maybe it would have a little cheat sheet on the website saying the most it could be, it's probably going to be this or whatever. The other thing is I know you guys have been so busy with all the stuff going on. When will you have a plan or a budget or a strategic plan, whatever you call it, that explains what that money's going to be spent for? So if it's $15.2 million, then what would that go for? Obviously, the big thing is going to be Point Hudson's jetties. But there has to be other things, and then also prioritizing things. It's going to take a long time to do the jetty versus doing some repairs down at Quilcene. Could be done really quickly. And if that's part of the equation, then maybe those repairs could be done earlier rather than later. Right now, they're in the budget for 2022 mm-hmm. or 23, I forget. So anyhow, just
suggestion. Thank you, Ron. We don't have anything on the agenda right away to address that.
Can I comment one thing?
Sure.
You know, just to comment, we do have a fairly robust capital budget,
right?
And these first funds would not come in until 2021, actually, right? Because of the tax of the next year. So, you know, even if the IDD were to happen, we're still a year and a half away from even knowing that we have those funds. So in that sense, Ron, what we end up doing is exactly what you're talking about in terms of taking the capital budget and prioritizing how that would be spent.
And actually, it would be 2020.
2020?
Yeah.
Yeah. You wouldn't get revenue in 2020.
Yes, we would.
You would levy in
2020. We would levy in 19 in the budget for the following year. 19 would be the base year.
Okay.
And then the AV value, whatever that is, the assessed value for the properties in 19,
right.
That sets it for the 20-year period.
Okay.
So if, you know, property values go up, it just...
I had a long discussion with Jeff Chapman kind of on this subject. I happened to be in a NODC meeting with him. We haven't done one in a long time, and so he's gone back to school on this. He thinks that probably we could take it in 2020, but it depends on, if this thing goes to a vote and there's some question about whether or not it's going to happen or not, you know, and then it depends on, you know, his staff at the end of the year and whatever else he has to do. I don't know, there's some question. I got the impression from him that he thought he could do it, but there was some question.
If I could add one more piece to the puzzle, we're not going to get $15.2 million next year.
No, of course.
We're going to
That's
get
over 20 years.
About $600,000. And if you know we've got a $4 million jetty to do, it's going to take us 4 years of this tax just to pay for Point Hudson. So a lot of people think you're going to get $15.2 million right off the bat, and we're not. It'll be
no, but you could borrow against that.
As long as you can pay the debt service.
That's what I mean. If you had $600,000 coming in a year, that would definitely help with the debt service, so you wouldn't have to do a loan where you only pay interest only and ignore the principal. You can do a regular loan, principal and interest.
But if I could just add one clarifying point, actually maybe two. What the commission did earlier this year was adopt a multi-year levy period resolution. No decisions whatsoever have been taken with respect to what amount to levy in any individual year. That will be an annual decision, year by year by year, based on kind of the totality of the port circumstances. It's capped by the statutory language at 45 cents in any individual year, and it's also capped as to the maximum amount over the total potential levy period, which is up to 20 years. So decisions are going to be made by this commission and subsequent commissions on an annual basis as part of the budget process.
Right. There's so many rumors flying around about this. It makes a lot more sense what you guys just said. Rumors are what fills up the space left by non-legislation.
Can I answer Kit's question too? We need this done, and lots of other people saying we need that done, and all of that. as we've talked about, and as we talked about at that meeting that you weren't at, was a citizens advisory board. And there will be a citizens advisory board advising the commission on what they think is appropriate for prioritizing that street.
When is that starting?
We don't, we haven't talked about it yet.
What we did discuss is, though, we think it's an important thing to do, and I think that what kind of predicated starting the new advisory board is getting the lease discussions finished up, which we had a workshop on this morning. So I think now that we're in the end of that, I think it's time to start on the citizens advisory board right away.
Perfect.
I wanted to talk to you about water meters.
I'm sorry, about what?
About the water meters. As you know, the $169,000 in utilities paid in 2017 billed to the marina, which are being used by other services. And it's a great opportunity for the port to be able to actually recoup that money from the people that actually use it. So I was feeling strongly that water meters should be put on the places of the highest use. But it was approved that they would be at the dock heads. And so I talked to Jim, and he told me that, well, the reason for that is because the water that's used also comes with a wastewater bill. And so if we documented that, we could deduct that from the amount we owe the city for the wastewater. So I went home and I ran some numbers, and the wastewater bill was $13,000 for 2017. If you, even a generous estimate, if the marinas use 10% of the water, which I don't, there's not a hose hooked up right now, that would be $1,300 a year. And if you're spending $30,000 on water meters, it would take 22.8 years in order to pay that off. Not very, very good. So I had a meeting with Jim. It was a very good meeting. We discussed a lot of issues. And he pointed out to me that actually, the reason is that they want to put the backflow meters in, which are mandated. And to do, as long as the things are open, they would put the water meters in. And he told me that that was actually going to cost another $22,000 as beyond the proposed budgeted $30,000. That would make $52,000. The capital budget for that is $30,000, so you're already 60% over budget. And you approved an engineering fee of $8,000 two meetings ago, and I didn't know whether that was included in the overall cost. So I'm really kind of confused about what the real cost of this project is going to be, and I wonder if you guys know what the cost of this, the true cost of this project is going to be, because it's it should really be looked at and pared down to figure out what is really necessary. I'm going to make a request that I look at the bid proposals and see if I can see what was asked and what was proposed. I know that there was some in-house things being done, but this is a project. This is a good example of where you don't want to run over the budget about what you have budgeted for, which is $30,000.
Thank you, Bertrand.
Yeah, thanks, Bertrand.
Anyone else? Going once, going twice. Sold. All right. Thank you very much. Consent agenda. Has everyone had a chance to look at the consent agenda and the items contained within?
Yep. I move we approve the consent agenda.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. We have no second readings. First reading. Climate mitigation and adaptation resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This matter comes to you essentially in response to the port's role as a participating member of the local climate action committee. In 2009, Jefferson County and the City of Port Townsend jointly adopted a climate action plan, and this was in recognition of at that time clear, and at this time even clearer science as to the ongoing effects of climate change and the need for local organizations to take a leadership role in showing what they were going to do, both to mitigate, that is to reduce to the extent they could, emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, and number two, to also begin to take measures in recognition of the need to adapt to the inevitable changes that are going to result from climate change. So earlier this year, the Climate Action Committee, which again is a 15-member committee with representation from the county, the city, the PUD, Jefferson County Public Health, Jefferson Healthcare, Jefferson Transit, Port Townsend Paper, as well as citizen citizen representatives and the port itself, recommended that local jurisdictions take this seriously and come forward with proposals for what we're going to do as participating organizations to address both mitigation and adaptation. So what we brought before you today is a draft resolution that seeks to outline some measures that really make awfully good sense that we probably should be doing, particularly on the mitigation side, as a matter of routine in any event. Essentially, the resolution would enshrine that that it is the Commission's intent that we, to the extent possible and within available funding, seek to make our buildings more energy efficient. And so that would include, but not necessarily be limited to, replacing doors and windows, to improving insulation in port structures, and to upgrading heating and ventilation systems so that they're more energy efficient. Also, and this is something that we've initiated in any event, but something that is good to enshrine and to make clear as port policy, is prioritizing fuel efficiency and durability as well as the long-term reliability as sort of key decision criteria in evaluating the purchases of both fleet vehicles and equipment at the port. And then also considering at least biofuels and electrification in procurement decisions as another potential option. Also on the mitigation side, wanting to essentially have commission direction that all our future equipment purchases, office equipment purchases, would be ENERGY STAR certified, and then beginning to develop and implement a strategy to replace port lighting with more energy efficient fixtures. So that's all on the mitigation side, sort of proposed measures to try to be more efficient and reduce our emissions. Then there's the adaptation side, and adaptation is really about how we will respond to the biophysical changes as they unfold. And what's proposed in the resolution before you is, number one, trying to diversify our operations to the extent practical, to develop new lines of business in preparation for these changes. And obviously the one that we're most concerned about in this regard is sea level rise. Number two, to continue to explore opportunities to expand the ag sector of the local economy, not only for its potential in boosting the local economy, but also because it's important to support ag just in terms of community resilience over the long haul and having more things grown locally rather than relying on long supply chains to provide us with everything we consume. Finally, focusing capital resources on maintaining the Boathaven Boatyard. And that's really in recognition of the skill set that we have here at Boathaven, which is one of the few and places in East Jefferson County where there really is a concentration of makers, fixers, doers that have practical skills that are going to be increasingly relevant and important to the community in the future. So that's the resolution that's proposed before you. It's very much a draft and first reading, and look forward to your comments and suggestions if you have any.
Has the court done an energy audit and cost and benefit analysis? So, you know, are there things that we could do, like replacing LEDs that in a fairly short term, or replacing lighting with LEDs in a fairly short term would kind of pay itself out? Or, I mean, the kind of no-brainer kind of thing we should be doing regardless of the policy things we should be doing that we just haven't done yet. I'm looking at the mitigation item one, and the retrofitting of a lot of port-owned buildings could be a very expensive/disruptive exercise. And I don't know if you've done, have you done any inspection kind of analysis on the ground about, you know, what sort of things, a punch list of what kind of thing they could do to meet that initiative?
So specifically, no. In broad brush, yes. That was actually part and parcel of the port-wide facility condition assessment that preceded the preparation of the draft capital repair and replacement plan way back in 2015. So many of the individual building retrofit recommendations that were contained within that draft report did relate to energy efficiency, windows, doors, insulation in particular. And we're currently in process right now working on a ventilation project, as you know, that was identified in this year's capital budget for the main building at Point Hudson, occupied by DFW and Customs and Border Protection. So have we done an energy audit ourselves? No. The Climate Action Committee is intending to work with us to help develop that information, I think as soon as this year, that is really going to be a focus to get better information. But I think, as you say, what's outlined here in many respects are things that we know we should be doing irrespective of the findings of an energy audit.
So here's a question then. So Chris just bought some vehicles for the port that were badly needed. And if this policy had been adopted and there were vehicles that were more expensive but hybrid that could have done the job, per this policy, would we have spent more money on those vehicles in order to achieve the hybrid capability?
I really don't think that's the case. I mean, I think what we're, you know, efficiency is a criteria, but also durability and long-term reliability are also criteria. So I think the intent here is to really have these as review considerations so that we carefully think about these issues before we're making equipment and vehicle purchasing choices. But I don't think that had these policies been in effect, that it would have precluded that. I mean, those vehicles are proven reliable. We got a great deal on them. And you know, the other part of this obviously is maintenance of the fleet. So, you know, good maintenance leads to better efficiency and longer term durability, and you know, the life cycle costs as well as the embedded emissions within equipment and vehicles is an important consideration too. So you can have something that that might not be on a miles per gallon basis that's necessarily the most efficient, but it's there and it's reliable and it's going to last a really long time compared to cycling through additional purchases that have embedded emissions in them on a more frequent basis is, you know, it could be a prudent decision. So in sum, no, would not preclude that decision. It's just trying to get staff and the commission to be mindful of these issues in these purchasing choices.
I think when we made those purchases, my memory serves, that there was a state of Washington imperative that drives us in the same direction.
Yes.
And when we made those purchases, it was a requirement of the commission to certify that upon inspection that there wasn't a vehicle appropriate to the task that would have embodied some of these factors.
Yeah.
That was affordable to it, and we did own up to that before that purchase was made. So regardless of what this document does, I think there are also state imperatives that the state is kind of pushing us.
And I think that prior resolution is actually echoed in mitigation measure 3 in the resolution.
Yes. All right. Anything else for discussion? All right, so thank you. Stormwater rate increase.
Yes, Commission, this is another first reading. Stormwater rates recently increased with the city, and we mirror whatever the city or the community rates are without any added fees. So this was just to give you an idea of what they would go to, and that would be effective June 1 for the properties. And I also threw in the dollars that we've spent on stormwater year to date since 2014, which is a little daunting, but and it, the rates that we've received don't reflect, an attempt to try to pay for that, those construction improvements, but just to give you an idea what we're responsible for and what we're trying to recover from tenants as best we can.
Okay. So this would be to the commission to approve a rate increase. We don't have anything on the books about pass-through. This is essentially a pass-through.
Well, no, because we are responsible in the properties for the water system. And that's something that happened in
2014.
Yeah.
Well, in 2014, the city and the port had an agreement where the city would waive their stormwater fees for us. So we don't pay the city, but we have to collect them to maintain our own stormwater system. So that's when the commission implemented this program based on square footage of what the stormwater charge would be port-wide. So really, our rate hasn't changed since 2014.
No.
So it's been 5 years at the same rate, but the city change has been the reason we need to relook at that.
I think the discrepancy between what it costs us and what we collect on stormwater fees is really an eye-opener. Stop and you look at this in the context of the lease things we're looking at in the workshop this morning. And this is one of those things that, oh yeah, we didn't really mention the stormwater that gets paid for just out of the port's pocket. It's something that's, I think, a real important thing to understand when in the context of having discussions regarding lease fees and so forth, leasing.
I think that's one of the things that it comes up in conversations about taxing as well, is that our tax stipend is mighty thin, mm-hmm. and these regulatory requirements on us are increasingly more costly, and it's a difficult thing for us to manage on the stipend we have, but there you go. Okay. Regular business.
Boy, but did everyone, I'm not sure that the audience, if everyone had a chance to look at that. We didn't really say it out loud. Maybe we did. But the port spent $1.153 million since 2014 to work on stormwater, and we collected $38,000 to pay for it. That's a huge difference. And it's basically just coming out of thin air right now. And this is one of the things that this IDD will help narrow. So
yeah, our entire tax stipend is something around $1 million now, and that is has to take care of all the recreational facilities, all of the infrastructure that we don't directly build tenants for. So it's a
No,
it was great comment. I'm glad you made it.
Regular business, the Bums lease.
So Bums of Marine has been out on the port for quite a few years and does a really important job in our boatyard. They tend to do things that a lot of people don't want to do or don't like to do. I don't know if you're aware that John Von Boakley has turned over the business to one of his employees, Jimmy Yovani. Jimmy has a business manager who seems to be very good at what she does, and came and requested a new lease from us. Joe was on a month-to-month agreement. They would like to actually have some assurance. So what they're requesting is a two-year lease with 3 one-year options for two boatyard spaces. They're boatyard spaces that really we don't use that much. It's right next to the porta potty and the transformers in the yard.
Strategically located.
It is strategically located. So Eric and I worked with this couple, and we believe that this would be a good opportunity for the port to solidify the lease and actually gives them some predictability and us predictability. So it's 1,200 square feet of property, and it's, what did we say, 45 cents? Mm-hmm.
45 cents.
45 cents per foot. So it comes out to $609 a month for this property. So a couple questions came up. One is when we put this together, we wanted to make sure the two things didn't happen. And we heard about it in the discussion this morning, parking. This lease specifically says no parking of personal vehicles in this space. And also, the other issue we had is Bums in the past had taken all of their paper waste that they use for masking boats and everything else and throw it in our dumpsters. And this is pretty explicit that they will not be doing that anymore, and they are responsible for their own waste. So it gave us an opportunity to really sit with the new tenants and really explain to them the processes that the port is expecting out of this property.
I see the holdover that we spoke about this morning is in this lease as well.
What did you say, Bill?
There's a holdover after the expiration of this lease.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I make a motion to accept this lease.
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Moving on. PD transformer easement.
So as I promised a few weeks ago, the PD is very anxious to work with the port in upgrading our electrical facilities. They've finished the engineering for the transformers down by the dye shop. They have replaced two very rusty transformers that we had in our 300 yard out by the waterfront, and now they're looking to upgrade transformers on our property line to 480 volt three-phase transformers. So with that, of course, they need easements to get this property or these lines through. So I met with them, as did Terry and our environmental person, to try to find an easement that they can use that would have the least amount of impact on our facilities. So there are two easements here to look at. The first easement, you can see the red dotted line skirts behind where PYR is, to service down by the waterfront. And it stays pretty much out of developable property. The second easement goes right next, actually, it starts behind Old Fire's building, Anderson Machine Shop, wraps around and comes down the street to cross over to come over to the admin building. So they're utility easements that will have the least impact on things in the future.
So on that second one, why are we putting a transformer next to the building, the administration building?
No, that's where we're getting, they're going to be getting power from there.
Oh, okay.
And they're bringing it out right behind Old Fire Building.
That's where they're going to add the transformer. So they're getting the power, are they, they're not getting it from where that other transformer is?
Well, you know, there's something over there that they're pulling it from, but I don't know exactly where they're getting it. But it will provide 480 three-phase the whole length of the fence, and that's our goal, all the way down to the shore.
They're going to bring transformers on our nickel to distribute it from there. Is there a project in the offing for that?
If you ask our yard guys, they would like us to start tomorrow on a whole new fence line of power with meters. At some point, we do need to get meters in the yard. We all know that's a problem.
And this certainly, as we expand things, and the meters ought to go in at the get-go.
Right now, it's just getting the transformers in the ground.
So you're looking for the commission to do an engineering analysis of this? And,
But I'd love a motion to approve these two easements.
Both of them?
Yes.
So is this going to affect the machine shop's power supply?
It's not going to affect them. They certainly can pull 480 off them if they needed to. Mm-hmm. And I haven't talked to Ofar whether he needs that or not.
Okay. So I make a motion to approve these two easements.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Key fob.
You took one of mine.
What is
it? That's all right.
So, as you're all aware, the bathrooms have been locked, and it's, in my mind, it's really helped security. We noticed, I was talking to one of our tenants the other day who lives aboard. They used to see homeless people and vagrants around the restroom all night. That operation has pretty much ceased. But now we need to take the second step. Locks have been installed. They were installed last month. So now we have the responsibility of distributing access points and how our tenants can access these. So I have in here my recommendation. I believe that every permanent tenant should get one key fob for free. They cost us about $4.23 a piece, so just so you have that in your mind, what they cost us for just the hardware.
So it costs us how much?
$4.23
each. Okay.
I think that there needs to be a charge for a second one. We have a lot of tenants that would like one for their wives or partners or whatever. So I think there needs to be a charge, and I'm proposing a $10 fee that would pay for the fob and also the administration to do that. And then there's the idea of a lost or stolen fob. What do we do if somebody says, oh, I lost my fob and I want a new one? I believe that the rate would be $25 for that. The beauty of this system is if you lose your fob, we can turn it off. So it's worthless. It's a worthless piece of equipment. Because we have who the fob belonged to, what the serial number was, and turn it off. But there still should be some kind of penalty for losing or having disappeared. We're still working on how to handle transient boats. The system is pretty good at issuing temporary codes that are unique codes. So if we have a transient boat come in, we can give him a four-digit code that'll expire when he leaves. So that's pretty easy. If we have someone in the yard for a short period of time, under a week, we can do that also. What we don't want to do is give codes long-term, because if we give codes long-term, we've defeated the purpose of what we're trying to do.
The restrooms are locked all the time. Is there a day code? How are ramp users and people like that?
So what we're trying to do is the next phase of this will be a kiosk that will be by the ramp that somebody can put their credit card in, and with that credit card they can ask for a code to the restroom. That code would be a unique restroom code that they can go to the restroom and put it in. It'll also be tied into the wash down water. So if you want to wash down, you put in that code, you can wash down. And you can use your key fob of water. So it's an integrated system that I think will work pretty well, but I'd like to do it in phases. The restroom is the first part of that. But I think long-term, having a kiosk with support for the trenches. Now, every annual pass ramp user will get a key fob. So Sue has done a great job. She has entered every name of every permanent mortgage tenant and every ramp pass user in the computer ready. So we're ready as soon as they start coming in next week. Actually, we start Friday?
Friday.
Friday, we're going to start issuing fobs. So all the information is already in the system. We just have to put a serial number in, and they're good to go.
Easy peasy.
So since the commission is the only one that can just raise some fees, we're asking you to either suggest addition or different fees or adopt these fees.
I make a motion to adopt these fees.
I second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those are good fees.
Okay. Support letter for the Puget Sound Day in Washington, D.C. Clear such a thing? We can find it.
So attached to that, I have an email from Kate Dean, who is off to Washington, D.C. Kate Dean, as we all know, is county commissioner, off to Washington, D.C. to really talk about the Salish Sea recovery and to make sure that the federal government doesn't forget us here. And so they're making a plea to make sure the funding continues to clean up and save the Salish Sea. So she is asking us to get online and write a letter of support to their mission. And I wanted the commissioner's take on that before I did that.
Discussion on this?
So basically what we need to do is to sign a letter that we don't have in front of us, right?
No, it's this one, right?
No, that's different.
That's different.
So where is the letter?
Where's the letter, Jim?
It's online, and the way they've got it, you sign in online and you say the Port of Port Townsend supports this, so I don't have that yet. So I can...
Can we pull it up on the thing so we can read what it is? Because, I mean, I'd like to have the whole board be on board with it, but we can't be on board with it unless we can...
No, I got the URL.
I don't know what it says.
I'm not a Puget Sound person.
Bill, you want me to do it from here?
You got it in your email, Bill, or did you?
You can do it from there, I guess, yeah.
You can't do it from...
You're going to do it with...
It's just taking a while to turn this on.
Do you have giraffes?
No.
So while we're waiting for the... Do you want to go on to the next?
I'll need to have the... address to here.
I guess maybe jumping back a little bit, how was the bathroom summit
situation? Are we still engaged with the city and the county about what to do now that our restrooms are...
My last idea of the bathroom summit was that Brian Koo actually got us all together, which was good. It took a long time, but it got done. And we made sure that the people that were displaced from here had a place to actually use. We made sure that people who were expecting that use would be able to anticipate the increased need and be ready for it in case it happened. So basically, in my mind, we took the problem and turned it over to the people whose problem it should have been. And so, if they're doing anything more that I haven't really heard, there's no more bathroom summits, as far as I know, on the horizon. I haven't heard any repercussions from people, you know, horribly upset or not having any place to get hygiene. So, but I haven't really kept up with what the city and the county have had discussions with each other about.
Yeah.
Have we given any...
Thanks.
Put any redirection signs on a restroom?
Yeah, is right in front.
Where are they?
We didn't put the other locations, but we did redirect people down to the shipyard for a couple of restrooms. So that's the other one. When we talked to the pool people, they didn't want it, nor did Fort Lord, a sign that says we're Fort Lord. People know that. But we did redirect to our other restrooms.
I have it on my mini.
And the people who did want it seemed to be the O3A people that were involved with the Legion facilities.
Can you make it bigger?
So I have it here. A laptop. I'll look at it.
Is that a, did you cast the...
I can save it and send it as a PDF.
I've got it in front of me.
I can read it as well.
Yeah, for some reason this doesn't cast.
Honorable chairs and regular members, Puget Sound is in serious decline, and recovery continues to be an urgent need, affecting economies at every level. Period. The shared recovery effort of federal, state, local, tribal, and non-government partners is lauded as an example of broad-based, effective partnership and innovation, and has for many years received bipartisan support. At the federal level, Puget Sound is recognized as an estuary of national significance. We are writing to communicate the critical importance of sustained federal support for actions that are essential to Puget Sound recovery. Serious, detrimental economic, cultural, social, and ecological consequences would result from the reduction or elimination of federal support for Puget Sound recovery. Paragraph. Federal support of Puget Sound recovery currently comprises three primary components. Puget Sound Geographic Program. Managed by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, this program has been essential to carrying out the large-scale, regional, federally approved recovery plan for Puget Sound. Extensive partner engagement lies at the foundation of the recovery plan, and the actions it includes are technically reviewed, ranked, and tracked for results by the Puget Sound Partnership. It also supports tribal participation in scientific research, resource recovery planning, and implementation of policy discussions on issues affecting tribal treaty rights. Second bullet point, National Estuary Program. Like the lead agencies and organizations for the other 27 designated estuaries of national significance around the country, the Puget Sound Partnership stewards critical sustaining support for the NEP funds. This non-regulatory program fosters innovation and idea transfer as it allows each location to be structured and governed according to local condition and needs. Bullet point, Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Fund. Administered by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, this multi-state, multi-tribe program that has provided critical support for salmon recovery efforts in the Pacific Coast region. Paragraph. In addition, the Pacific Salmon Treaty is critical to meeting the provisions of the Federal Endangered Species Act, addressing tribal fishing rights and maintaining sustainable U.S. fisheries that provide 26,700 full-time equivalent jobs and $3.4 billion in economic value annually. Signed by the United States and Canada in 1985, it provides a framework for the two countries to cooperate on the management of the Pacific salmon on management physics exam and is revised roughly every 10 years to reflect the current conditions and address new challenges. The revamped PST 2019-2028 reflects the international commitment to ensure a better future for salmon and southern resident orcas. Paragraph, the U.S. Department of Agriculture Voluntary Conservation Program for working lands also make important contributions to food sound recovery. These programs help reduce soil erosion, enhance water supplies, improve water quality, increase wildlife habitat, and reduce damages caused by flood and other natural disasters. Finally, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Aquatic Ecosystem Restoration, Business Line, and Continuing Authorities Program support the Puget Sound Nearshore Ecosystem Restoration Project to design and implement large-scale and smaller-scale habitat restoration projects. These programs will leverage already secured state funds to improve the health of our nearshore habitats and their ability to support shorebirds, shellfish, salmon, orca, and humans. All in bold. Paragraph. Working together, these funds and programs enable an investment strategy that leverages support for large-scale projects or series of interconnected projects that maximize benefits and outcomes, achieve more than would separate and coordinated investments. The loss of any of these critical components could or would impact the effectiveness of the overall recovery system. Paragraph. Federal partners have recognized the value of collaborating in these Puget Sound recovery efforts, which, bullet point, create jobs in a variety of industries, including food, hospitality, sustainable forestry, international trade, and international oil transportation safety and spill prevention. Sub-bullet point, Washington State leads the nation in production of farmlands, oysters, or farm clams, oysters, and mussels. Puget Sound contributes 79% of the dollar value and 69% of the pounds of farmed shellfish produced statewide. Second bullet point, the state's marine industry, which includes fishing fleets, ports, and seafood processors, generates $30 billion annually. Third sub-bullet point, the natural assets in Puget Sound provide a competitive advantage to key industries that compete globally for highly skilled talent. Fourth bullet point, sub-bullet point, the average annual gross domestic product of recreation and tourism in Puget Sound is $3.2 billion. Next bullet point. Help fulfill the government's treaty obligations of 17 Puget Sound treaty tribes, protecting the treaty tribal rights and preserved treaty resources. Next bullet point. Promote resilience of human communities and thriving coastal economies against natural disasters. Next bullet point. Repair and update crumbling infrastructure and support innovative approaches and technologies such as permeable pavement, rain gutters, green roofs, and other green stormwater infrastructure in order to reduce the impact of our growing population on the Puget Sound ecosystem. Next bullet point. Emphasize voluntary, non-regulatory approaches to reach recovery goals as a complement to regulatory approaches. Next bullet point. Share learning from continuous innovation with recovery efforts across the nation. Next bullet point. Value and integrate intergovernmental engagement in decisions. Next bullet point. Benefit a broad range of interests, including shellfish, aquaculture, commercial fisheries, agriculture, public safety, public health, recreation, employment, preservation of cultural identity, and human welfare. Next bullet point, leverage funds from many sources to increase returns on investment. Next bullet point, ensure that decisions are informed by science, technical expertise, effectiveness, monitoring, and learning. Next bullet point, use non-regulatory approaches to reduce nutrient pollution, particularly from non-point sources in support of the Clean Water Act. Final bullet point, collaborate with British Columbia and the Canadian government, with whom we share the Salish Sea, to increase investment in recovery on both sides of the border. Paragraph, a federal government retreat from investing in Puget Sound recovery this time would be devastating to the ecosystem and economy, severely disrupting ongoing shared efforts and limit options for actions. Disinvestment now would only result in increased costs in the future to recover an ecosystem that, at this time, can still be saved. Puget Sound is close to undergoing irreversible changes. Last summer, the Pacific Northwest Southern resident orcas were the focus of international attention when their critical struggle survival culminated in the death of a newborn calf whose mother grieved over her calf's body for an unprecedented 17 days and 1,000 miles. The population has now declined to 700 individuals. It has been estimated that 70 may be the limit beyond which the southern resident orcas may not be able to recover. The southern resident orca's primary food, Chinook salmon, is also seriously threatened. Paragraph. Our local governments invest heavily in Puget Sound through preventing stormwater pollution, enacting ordinances to protect critical areas, protecting shorelines, and supporting other programs. Similarly, the state invests in programs that support clean and healthy water resources and habitats and that promote business and the jobs that depend on these resources. Tribal governments are co-managers of the salmon resources in Puget Sound in the Puget Sound region and provide steadfast leadership, generous investment, and valuable technical expertise in their commitment to achieve recoverable goals. Bold, we only ask for a commensurate partnership from the federal government to support ongoing work and the investment by people locally is saving a national treasure. Paragraph, as Congress contemplates funding for fiscal year 2020, the undersigned respectfully asks to you ensure that following appropriations measures includes. First bullet point, a modest increase in funding to $35 million for the Puget Sound Geographic Program. Bullet point, a modest increase in funding to $70 million for the Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Fund, NOAA. Next paragraph, a modest increase in funding to $750,000 for each national estuary program, including the Puget Sound Partnership, plus $4 million for competitive grants and programs. Next bullet point, an initial one-time investment of $57.1 million for the Puget Salmon, for the Pacific Salmon Treaty to ensure successful start and an ongoing investment of $52.4 million to fund the complex implementation of an international treaty. Next bullet point. Maintain level funding of $54.6 million for the NOAA Habitat Conservation and Restoration Program. Next bullet point. At least level funding for the Voluntary Conservation Program for Working Lands, USDA. Next bullet point. An increase in funding to $1.5 million for the Aquatic Ecosystem Restoration Business Line Investigations Account and new funding of $500,000 for the Continuing Authorities Program, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Final bullet point, adequate and timely funding of U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for necessary next steps to complete federally required downstream fish passage at the Howard Hanson Dam, which represents an important step to increasing the number of salmon in Puget Sound and supporting the recovery of the southern resident orcas. The undersigned, thank you for your past support and you urge you to act on these requests. And the letter is addressed to Jerry Morin, Chair, and Gene Shabian, Ranking Member of the U.S. Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Commerce, Justice, Science, and Related Actions. Lisa Murkowski, Chair, Tom Udall, Ranking Member, U.S. Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on the Interior Environment and Related Agencies, John Hoven, Chair, Jeff Merkley, Ranking Member, U.S. Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Agriculture, Rural Development, Food and Drug Administration, Jose Serrano, Chair, and Robert Alderhote, Ranking Member, House of Representatives Appropriations Subcommittee on Commerce, Justice, Science, Related Agencies, Benny McCollum, Chair, and David Joyce, Ranking Member for U.S. House of Representatives Appropriations Subcommittee on Interior Environment and Related Agencies, Sanford Bishop, Chair, and Jeff Fortenberry, Ranking Member, U.S. House of Representatives Appropriations Subcommittee on Agriculture, Rural Development, Food and Drug Administration. And it's dated May 15, 2019.
So anybody want Frank to reread that? Or? Okay.
Pretty long. Pete, you have
something to say?
Nothing.
Nothing to say. Steve?
It was a pretty long-winded request. I hope those guys have a lot of patience to read it. But I mean, there's nothing in there I disagree with, so I think we should go ahead and authorize our unanimous voice in supporting her request for that fund. So I make a motion we approve that we support that.
1 second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. See, that was easy.
Yeah, it was easy for Frank. Any
voice? Staff comments.
Sue has none.
Nothing from Sue?
No.
None at this time. Thank you.
None at this time. Thank you.
None at this time.
Legal?
None.
All right. Made it through that. Commissioner comments?
I've got none.
I have none.
Make it unanimous.
I guess nothing of extreme importance, although I could go through your longer, it used to be improvement, and now it's advisory committee meeting. So that was fun. A lot of good people turned out for that. There will be an executive session lasting
an hour, I'd say.
No, no.
60 minutes-ish.
No action taken.
No action will be taken.
It's a personnel action to discuss the performance of a public employee, and no action will be taken.
There you have it. Next regular business meeting will be Wednesday, May 22nd at 5:30 in the Port Commission building here. Thank you for your attendance. The regular business meeting is closed, and we are reopening in executive session.